Today is Equal Pay Day, but by the numbers, we've still got a long way to go. That conversation's coming up. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. You can also subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher or watch the show video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, the longstanding goal of equal pay for equal work. We'll take a look at why today is Equal Pay Day and look at the reasons why men and women still don't earn the same paycheck for the same job. Yes. Get on the line now at 549-2937 with your thoughts about that. Then later, it's a new option for patients on the First Coast who want to screen for colon cancer. Plus, the One Jax Humanitarians of 2016, including our own CEO. All of that and more ahead. But first this hour, today, April 12th, is the day set aside as Equal Pay Day. It's the day the average woman's pay finally catches up to the average man's pay for the previous year. Now, despite decades of calls for change, the gender pay gap in this country remains stubbornly in place. In fact, it hasn't budged in about a decade. AAUW, the American Association of University Women, is a leader in the quest for equal pay for equal work. Lisa Matz is Vice President of Government Relations for AAUW, and she's on the line from Washington to share new research on the gender pay gap and take your calls. Lisa, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And what are your questions and comments about Equal Pay Day? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. Lisa, as I mentioned, this gap hasn't budged in at least a decade. The average now is 79 cents an hour women make to a man's dollar, correct?
That's correct. I guess it did bump up a penny last year, but, you know, don't spend it all in one place.
Right. So on your website, AAUW.org, you've got some really fascinating research looking at the reasons driving this gender pay gap. Can you share some of that with us?
Well, you know, the pay gap is a complex problem, and it deserves some complex solutions. Part of it, literally, is purely discrimination. And we've done the research to show that when you compare women and men in the same occupation, with the same GPA, from the same field, with the same job, I mean, pretty much comparing everything but the kitchen sink, 1 year out of school, you already find a gap. It's smaller, but it's still there. So we know that there's still a discrimination gap, but we also have an issue in terms of job segregation. You know, we tend to have jobs that are classified as more male jobs and jobs that are more female jobs. And not surprisingly, the female jobs pay less. One way that women have strategized to increase their pay is to get into some of the male-dominated fields, engineering and the STEM fields and so forth. But even in those fields, they make much less. And men make more than women in the female-dominated jobs. So in other words, male nurses often make more than female nurses. So in some respects, I think sometimes women feel like you can't win for losing. But the reality is we are making progress. There is legislation passing across the country. There's increased attention to this issue. And today, Equal Pay Day is really the culmination of that, where we really try to galvanize efforts and educate the public.
Right. And in 2009, of course, the bipartisan Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act was enacted into law. What are some other bipartisan ways that you think this issue can be addressed?
Well, you know, equal pay has always been a bipartisan issue, or even a nonpartisan issue. When the first law was passed back in 1963, it was two female members of Congress, one Republican, one Democrat, both AUW members, which is great. But the reality is now, unfortunately, it has gotten a little partisan, and it shouldn't. This is a family issue. This is a national economic issue. It's not got anything to do with partisan politics. So we've seen on the state legislative front some real work in that direction. California now has the strongest equal pay law in the country, and that was supported by the California Chamber of Commerce and virtually unanimously passed through a legislature that is by no means completely liberal or completely conservative. California is a big state, so they've been a good example. Utah, obviously a perennially red state, has been able to do some small work on equal pay. So not like the big sweeping bills, but chipping away at it and and progress is what's important. So, you know, we still have a ways to go. But I think you're going to hear a lot about equal pay in this election. I think no matter who the candidates are, it's an issue. Time has come and voters want something done about it.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment if you're just tuning in as we speak with Lisa Matz of AAUW about today's Equal Pay Day. What are your thoughts and comments about your paycheck? The number to join us, 549-2937. And as you have noted on your website, Lisa, when women earn more money, that's not just good for women. That's good for everybody. It's good for the economy. It's good for their families and their husbands or partners. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, the thing about it is when women when people have funds, they will spend it for the most part. We're talking when we talk about the wage gap, working class and middle class women. And the reality is they need those funds. They need them for their children, for food, for rent, for the basics of daily life. It always comes back to business in the end. So for businesses, it's the right thing to do, not only because it's kind of simple fairness, but quite frankly, you have higher morale amongst your employees. They're more productive. They stay longer. So you have less turnover costs. A lot of these family-friendly policies end up being very good for business as well. The other thing I wanted to mention that I should have mentioned right off the top is that when we talk about this gap, that 79-cent gap, that's for all women. But we always need to remember that while the pay gap affects every woman virtually, it affects all women differently. So women of color in particular have even steeper gaps than they face, and moms do as well. There's definitely a motherhood penalty in the workplace.
You have found, in fact, that when women have children, their pay gap widens. When men have children, it actually narrows.
That's right. It's a huge value judgment when you think about it, both in terms of whose work is valuable and where, you know, what the assumptions are about who's going to be taking care of the kids. Does nothing, of course, for the fact that there are so many female-headed households, let alone households that have two parents, but rely very heavily on both incomes. You know, the women's income is not just a luxury. That's how families get by. So, we got lots of cultural stereotypes that also contribute to the wage gap, just because people have been raised with the assumptions about what roles are going to be, gender stereotypes and bias. And it comes out in decision making, both in terms of hiring, in terms of promotion and pay decisions. As a result, we get a bigger and bigger wage gap.
And you even have data looking at the pay gap in different states. Up where you are, Washington, D.C., it's the smallest. Women earn about 90% of what men earn in Washington. In Louisiana, women earn just 65% of what men earn. That's the biggest disparity in any of our 50 states. What about Florida?
You know, it's interesting because Florida hasn't really changed in terms of data over the years. They've also been pretty stagnant. And I'm just flipping to the right place in terms of Florida data. But one of the things I'll say about Florida is you've got a diversified economy, and that helps a lot. Sometimes in states like Louisiana, Wyoming, I need to see kind of differences in terms of the way the wage gap works. If you're a ranching state, if you're a farming state or agriculture, mining, those are very male-dominated jobs, and there aren't a lot of jobs for women, or women's jobs are combined in with men, say, on a ranch or a farm. Florida is much more diverse, and as far as that goes, we're able to, mitigate the pay gap just a little bit, but the reality is that it's still there. And I'm so sorry because I have the Florida numbers here, but
that's
it's
all right.
Not going up for me.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment about Equal Pay Day. The number to join us, 549-2937. Tweets and emails, too, in just a moment. You know, the website TheReal10.org allows women to upload their photo to a $10 bill as a way to talk about the U.S. Treasury is going to put a woman on the $10 bill soon. At the same time, it's a way to dramatize how women earn less. And when I uploaded my image yesterday, my $10 bill was $7.80. So when I uploaded that, Lisa, to my Facebook page to preview this topic, I wasn't surprised that a couple of people on my Facebook page who happened to be men disputed the reality of the gender pay gap and argued that it didn't exist. What would you say to those listening who don't agree with your studies and your findings on this, and they think that extenuating factors are contributing to the gender pay gap, not just gender bias in the workplace.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say in some respects, they're right. It's not all about discrimination, but some of it is. And that's the part that we have to deal with. At 79 cents on the dollar is an average stat between men and women. So if you get down to a much more apples to apples comparison to see where women stand, the thing that you always hear from critics is that, well, it's women's personal choice, which I always kind of laugh at because I think really women would choose personally to make less money. But and it's also, of course, not recognizing the facts that the choices that women make are themselves not constrained by bias or lack of opportunity or outright discrimination. But so what we did, and this is for your friends who think there's not a gap, was a really strong regression analysis. And we controlled for literally 10, 15 different factors, college major, GPA, hours worked, months unemployed, the region, what the institutional selectivity of the school you went to, virtually all the things that reasonable people like you and I would say, yeah, that could affect how much money you make. What we found is that 1 year out of college, same major, same job, same GPA, same hours worked, all that stuff, there's already a 7% gap. Now, again, some detractors would say, oh, well, 7%, that's not very much. But the reality is I would challenge them to relinquish 7% of their own paycheck for no good reason, mm-hmm. and to forego the compounding raises and bonuses that people get as a result of how much they make. Suddenly 7% doesn't seem so inconsequential. So the wage gap is there. It's not a myth. It's math. And you can find the math on AEW's website. Even when you control for these so-called choices, you still find a gap that's unexplained. That's the discrimination gap. That's the one we need to have stronger laws for.
And when women, and there has been a wealth of data to show that women typically, not always, but traditionally don't negotiate as aggressively when they're interviewing for a position and negotiate for a higher salary than the one that's initially offered as men do. And that includes young men and women coming right out of college.
Sure.
Is that part of the issue as well?
Well, you know, AEW believes in salary negotiation, but we don't believe that you can negotiate your way around discrimination. I mean, the reality is negotiation for women is very different than negotiation for men, right? We have very special names and not nice names for assertive women in our culture.
Right.
So it's not like a woman can just go in and negotiate and not necessarily potentially have it backfire on her. That's part of why we do salary negotiation workshops at AEW, because it's not just a negotiation, it's a minefield. And while we want women to utilize that if it seems appropriate in a given situation, they need information to be able to do it in a way that doesn't actually backfire on them. And again, I would say that's even harder for women of color. Yeah. All respect to your folks who say that it's not really there, that it's a figment of our imagination. It's really not. Women can do math, girls can do math, and we can see that there is this gap.
549-2937. Let's go to Monica in Jacksonville. Hey, Monica, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just have a question. You know, how is this all going to taking place to have equalization of the wages? Are the thoughts, okay, we're going to take away some of the salary from the man and give it to the woman when they have an equal job? Or is this going to have to start changing when the people are being hired, such as, you know, you have a corporation, maybe executive, and they're looking for a new executive, but, you know, the man was making a lot more. Now this woman comes in. She should be making the same for the same job, same pay, but are they going to say, okay, no matter who gets this job, it's going to be this salary? Because I can't see in a present job that you would be taking, you know, you would be telling Billy, hey, Billy, we're going to take away some of your salary, because even though Susie's been doing as good of job, the same job, she's been paid less because she's a woman. You know, that's not going to work. So I'm just curious.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Monica. And Lisa, there are some ideas and strategies you've laid out on your website for how to address this in companies. Can you share those?
Yeah, and certainly taking wages away from men is not one of them. That's a big myth out there that somehow if you deal with equal pay for equal work for women, but that means you're going to actually lower men's salaries to do it. That's not the case at all. What you want to do quite frankly, is raise everybody's salaries. Everybody's salaries have been stagnant over the last several years. But for women's salaries, what you want is a fair salary that's based on the job that she's going to do, not her gender. So that's number one. Number two, you want to have stronger equal pay laws. Right now, the laws we have on the books are more than 50 years old. And they've been litigated enough that there are loopholes in them that I could drive a Mack truck through. So the reality is we need to tighten them up and, quite frankly, create not just better deterrence, because we want companies to be proactively enforcing this. Right now, the penalties for discriminating against a woman in pay are very minor. So it's just a slap on the wrist. Why would you follow the rules when it's so much cheaper not to? But if you make them stronger and make companies sit up and take notice, which is, I think, something that the Obama administration has been trying to do, then you hopefully get some proactive enforcement. The other thing I'll say that's going to happen that's not legislative at all but could have huge consequences is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is going to be in the next year collecting pay data from all employers with 100 or more employees. Summary pay data based on race and gender. And what that's going to do is give red flags, both to the companies and to the EEOC. You know, if I'm a CEO of a company and I see that my data indicates that I may have a pay gap, I'm going to look into that before I turn that data into the government. And that's what we want. We want proactive enforcement.
And, typically, companies' practice of keeping salaries secret so that workers don't know what their colleagues are making. There's been a call in recent years to change that corporate custom, too, hasn't there?
You know, there has. I think so. And the reality is we're seeing some companies taking some positive step forwards to change their own culture, whether it's The Gap or Salesforce or Intel. There are different companies that are doing their own gender audits and coming up with good information and seeing literally when they hit the button to correlate the data that, in fact, while they thought they'd been paying fairly, they had, in fact, put in place a gap. The reality is these decisions are made by humans. Humans are fallible. We're all succumb to different stereotypes and biases about all kinds of different types of people. The reality is we just have to keep checking ourselves and make sure that we're not letting those biases find their way into these kinds of decisions.
549-2937. Chef in Orange Park. Chef, good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you today?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling.
I really thank you guys for this topic. Let me just share this. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and I've been down here 8 years. Here's what the real issue is. People down here that are not of color have to stop marginalizing people of color and genders. That's what's going to help, and there's got to be a whole lot more transparency when it comes to salaries. Because if you don't have transparency, you don't even know where you stand in the salary piece at all.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chef.
That's the golden word right there, transparency. The data for Florida is at 85%, so the state is above the national average. But the caller is absolutely right. Transparency is key. And I don't mean publishing everybody's salary on the break room wall. I mean having the freedom to ask those questions, share that information with colleagues, and not be fired for it, because right now you can be fired for it. So transparency is key. You can't know that you're being discriminated against unless people are willing to share data.
And that's what happened with Lilly Ledbetter. She found out that her male colleagues who had the same position she had were being paid much more. When she tried to challenge it, she was told that it was too late. That's right. Yeah. Can you explain
right.
what that legislation did?
Yeah. Well, you know, she got an anonymous note that told her that she was being paid unfairly. The reason why it was anonymous is because Goodyear said if anybody shared salary information, they'd be fired. So we still don't know who that person is. And essentially what she did was litigate that case. She won the case on the merits. And Goodyear actually never really denied that they didn't pay her fairly, but at the end of the day said, well, she just filed too late. So it was a statute of limitations issue. So the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act had equal pay as the facts of the Supreme Court case in question, but it was really a civil rights bill in the sense of keeping the courtroom doors open, whether it was age discrimination, race discrimination, gender discrimination. So it was a critical bill to keep that statute of limitations at a reasonable time so that people could potentially have a chance to find out that they may in fact have been discriminated against. But I can't agree with your caller more. We have very specific issues in terms of transparency that get in the way of fair pay, and we absolutely have to keep our eye on the ball that women of color and moms face a much bigger obstacle when it comes to gender pay.
Brian in Jacksonville Beach. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Good morning. So some people would argue, and I would be one of them to argue, that the unionization of the workforce could also help with equal pay for women. And I'd like to hear what your guest has to say about that.
Lisa.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. It's one of the reasons you mentioned the D.C. region having such a smaller pay gap. Part of the reason is because there are a lot of federal government jobs here, and a lot of those federal government jobs not only have transparency in terms of pay, but also have unions. So unions make a big difference because it's collective bargaining and negotiating. Things are transparent, and the wages are given for the job, not the gender of the person doing the job. So I can't thank our union brothers and sisters enough, quite frankly, in terms of how much progress we've made because of equal pay. But as I said, we have a long way to go. Most folks aren't in unions these days, which is a whole other topic and cause for concern, I would say. And one of the things we need to look at as a solution towards equal pay.
Here's a tweet from a listener. What's the status with equal pay in the broadcasting and journalism fields? That's one I'm clearly interested in, too. What about that?
You know, there is a gender pay gap in virtually every occupation. There's about 250 occupations or so that the Department of Labor tracks, and I think there's only four of them. Now, don't ask me the four because it's early in the morning here, but there's only four of them that are not actually prone to a pay gap. So journalism, we absolutely see it, both in terms of pay, but also in terms of promotion. So there's not only a pay gap, but there's a leadership gap. And part of the reason why there's a pay gap is because there aren't enough women being promoted into editor positions, into managing editor positions, so on and so forth.
You can learn more at AAUW's website, aauw.org. Today's Equal Pay Day, and Lisa Matz is VP of Government Relations for the American Association of University Women. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me.
Much more still to come. But first, when it comes to money and fundraising and dollars, we need yours. Here's how you can support 89.9.
And you can call 353-9528. Michelle Corum here with David Luck. And David, I think we have a pay gap. Right now, we're at 53. We need 80. There's a big gap there that we need to fill, and we're asking for everybody to pick up the phone and call that number I just gave.
And we're going
to
ask for the same amount from men and women.
It doesn't matter.
So there will be no discrimination
here.
If you can offer us $120 at $10
a
month, that's for everyone. We're going to be very transparent. Take the words from our
See
friend.
See how much we learn from First Coast Connect.
See, how many times have you started a conversation with, I heard it on NPR?
Yeah, right.
And if you're one of those people, then you rely on us to give you good information and sound information and the proper amount of news mixed in with the proper amount of music. This is a 24-hour music and news service right here at WJCT. Your community, your world, but we can't do it without you. We need your phone call now at 353-9528. We're just a little over 53,000. We need 10 callers in this break, as I say every time we're on the air. 10 callers a break would get us there, and we would quit this pledge drive today.
Mm-hmm.
So make that call, 353-9528.
And, you know, you, the listener, is really one of our most important funding sources that we depend on because you make up about 25% of our total operating budget, the money that you give the station. Really helps go a long way to help us meet our pay challenges that we have. We have to pay for programming, we have to pay for salaries, and just to have the station run. And that money comes with no strings attached, which means that people like you who make the who make the WJCT programs materialize. You can invest it in programming, or we invest it rather in programming that delivers the greatest value to you and the community. So call with your contribution now if you can, while we're listening to First Coast Connect, one of our jewel programs here on WJCT, hosted by Melissa Ross, and a real connection to what's going on in the community. Not to mention, I didn't know that April 12th was Fair Pay Day. Yeah. And so that's the kind of thing you keep up on.
It's very true. Mm-hmm. And if you're at home doing your Robert De Niro impression of, you talking to me? Yes, yeah. We are talking to you.
Talking to me.
We want you to call us now at 353-9528. You didn't call us last year. This is your year. Mm-hmm. If you're one of those procrastinators and you said, oh, I'll call next time they do a drive, or next year, time's up. Call us now, 353-9528. We do need your help. We pay over $500,000 for the programming here. It doesn't come cheap, but then good things in life never do. So call us now, 353-9528. We're about to go back to First Coast Connect and my friend Melissa Ross. So you can call us now. She will thank you. We will all thank you when you call 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or anytime at all online at wjct.org. And we thank you so much for your support.
Well, there's a health crisis in the U.S., but it's preventable. Here's what it is. Despite national guidelines, one in three adults over the age of 50 does not go and get screened for colon cancer as recommended. The fact is that with a proper screening, colon cancer is very preventable. But the lack of screenings means the disease remains the second leading cause of cancer-related death in this country, and death rates could continue to climb. The good news is there's a new option available here in Jacksonville to change how doctors screen for colon cancer. It's called Cologuard, and it's the first and only FDA-approved non-invasive screening test for this disease. Dr. Kyle Edscorn is a physician with the city's Borland Groover Clinic. He's now prescribing Cologuard, and he joins us to tell us how it works. Doctor, so good to see you.
Good morning. Cologuard, well, this is the newest option for diagnosing patients who are at risk for colon cancer. Specifically, it's a genetic test. Mm-hmm. It's a genetic test using a specimen, a fecal specimen. And the neat thing is you basically have the test ordered by your physician. The kit is sent to your house. In the privacy of your bathroom, you get a specimen and you send it off in the mail, and the results come back to both you and your physician. And what it's looking for is specific genetic markers for polyps. And polyps are the structural changes of the colon which can mm-hmm. evolve into colon cancer. Not always, but if you have a polyp, you want to have it resected. And so those patients who have a positive Cologuard test will then eventually end up having a colonoscopy.
I see. So if the first test comes back with red flags, you do have to go in and have this procedure done. And that's the big hurdle, isn't it? People don't want to go and do that.
Yeah. And this is the important thing, because there is a segment of the population which just does not want to have a prep. They don't want to be put under with anesthesia. They just frankly have fears of invasive procedures.
Yeah.
And so Cologuard, we hope, will get to those patients who otherwise would not get any kind of testing.
Now, how effective is it in the same way that maybe a mammogram is effective at diagnosing a potential issue? How effective is Cologuard?
So the literature on Cologuard, when you compare it to colonoscopy in detecting medium to large polyps, they're almost equal. The difference are for very small polyps, in which Cologuard will not be as sensitive as colonoscopy. But if you don't have anything versus colonoscopy, I mean, Cologuard now answers a option to a patient population which otherwise was refusing any form of screening.
And as we mentioned, everyone over the age of 50 in this country is recommended to have a screening done, but about 30% of American adults blow it off, and they just don't do it.
And that's correct. Now, one thing I do want to stress, though, African Americans, we recommend colorectal screening to start at the age of 45, and a lot of physicians forget that.
And that is due to?
Increased prevalence of colon cancer.
Just an increased prevalence. You know, some years ago when Katie Couric was still anchoring the Today Show and her husband, Jay Monahan, died of colon cancer because it wasn't diagnosed until much too late. She became the national face of this early detection and screening movement. I remember so well when she underwent a colonoscopy live on television and really brought awareness. Now, that was, gosh, that's been 10, 15 years ago.
And let me tell you something. What she did was tremendous because nationally, after that broadcast where she had her colonoscopy, the public awareness of colon cancer increased dramatically, and the number of colonoscopies that were being performed increased dramatically after her bringing the topic to the national forum.
Right. But now, as the excitement about that has faded, you've got to continually remind folks. And so with Cologuard now available, what is the easiest way for people in this area to access this test, which is so much easier to do?
Well, actually, and that's the neat thing about this. You don't need a gastroenterologist to order it. You can just ask your family practitioner, your primary care physician, your gynecologist. They can order this test. It's basically like ordering a blood test.
Mm-hmm. So if you're over 50 and you haven't had this procedure done, check out Cologuard, as Dr. Etzkorn says. Get it through your primary care doctor or whichever physician you see. This is a new way to screen for colon cancer. It's the second leading cause of cancer deaths in this country, but with early screening, you can really be effective in catching this disease. Such important medical news. Dr. Kyle Etzkorn with us. He is with Jacksonville's Borland Groover Clinic, and we thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
And more to come.
I'm Jessica Palumbo. Our promise to you is as soon as we hit our $80,000 fundraising goal, this pledge drive is over. Everyone who gives is entered for our grand prize drawing for an Apple Watch. So what are you waiting for? It's time to give right now at wjct.org or call 904-353-9528. And thanks.
Join WJCT at the Timaqua National Ecological and Historic Preserve on April 16th to explore the outdoors. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Curious George will be on hand with Main Metal Recycling, teaching families how to recycle. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
On the next Fresh Air, comics Nadia Manzoor, who grew up in England in a conservative Muslim Pakistani family, and Radhika Vaz, who grew up in India, they have a web sketch comedy series called Shugs and Fats, in which they play immigrant Muslim women dressed in burqas trying to adapt to their new culture of their home in Brooklyn. In their real lives, Manzoor and Vaz are feminists. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Artists, would you like your photography, music, paintings, or poetry featured on WJCT? Submit your work to The Square, an online gallery and competition for local artists. Winners get a quality video produced by WJCT about their work. If you've submitted during a past round, you can submit again. Share your work now at wjct.org/thesquare. Presented by WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market.
Welcome back. Well, they are celebrating 90 years of service on the First Coast. It's incredible, this legacy. Nearly a century of helping kids, young adults, and families. First founded back in 1926 as a children's hospital, Hope Haven of Jacksonville transforms thousands of families each year by providing a range of services to kids and families with special needs. Hope Haven's CEO, Joanne Robertson, is here now with more about this week's big celebration, 90 years. I forget what one that is. The 100th anniversary is, or 50th is golden, so I don't even know what 90 is. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me here.
I did not realize that Hope Haven first began in the 20s as a children's hospital.
It did. And many people here who are natives of Jacksonville remember that, the children's hospital.
And over the years, it's evolved. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It started as children's hospital, working with children with tuberculosis and polio. And then as cures for those changed, it became a surgery hospital for children's surgical issues.
Uh-huh.
And then in the 80s, we changed again to a total outpatient. And that's when Nemours bought the hospital piece. We became outpatient.
And you've helped so many families over the years. And when we say special needs, that's a whole range, a whole spectrum. You work with all kinds of families.
Absolutely. We like to say that we help children with all abilities. So we have a range of children who have autism, dyslexia, Down syndrome, ADHD, as well as children who have gifted abilities.
And when you work with these kids, what are some of the services Hope Haven provides? Because many families listening, they may have a child that needs help, and this may be the first time they've heard about Hope Haven.
We have after-school programs, our after-school programs are for children who have physical and or intellectual disabilities. We have a tutoring program for children of all abilities, and that range is from young children up till college-age children who may need help with that difficult math class in college. We have a Down syndrome clinic where we do evaluations, and then provide a map for services such as physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, all of which we provide. And then we have preschool as well as a kindergarten class. And those classrooms are all-inclusive, which means we have children with and without disabilities in those classrooms.
And families can access Hope Haven regardless of their ability to pay.
That's correct. We do bill insurances. And then we do also have grants that we can access. Our staff really help parents to find the resources if they don't have the ability to pay.
So this Thursday at 4 o'clock, you're going to celebrate quite a milestone, 90 years on the First Coast, and you want to invite everybody to come on out to your campus at 4600 Beach Boulevard.
That's correct. From 4 to 6, we will be having tours of our facility. And at 5 o'clock, we will have a brief ceremony where we will just celebrate our clients over the years, thank our funders over the years, because we are funded by donations as well as grants. We want to just celebrate all of our services that we've provided for the last 90 years in the community of Jacksonville.
It's an incredible celebration, 90 years of service on the First Coast. Not a lot of organizations in the city can say that. So kudos, first of all. And second, if you're just tuning in, you need to come on out Thursday to Hope Haven Children's Clinic and Family Center, 4 o'clock Thursday, a chance to tour the campus, be part of the celebration. They are at 4600 Beach Boulevard, the website hope-haven.org. So good to see you, and thanks for being with us, and congratulations.
Thank you.
She's Hope Haven CEO Joanne Robertson, and we'll be right back.
Venezuela has a problem.
It basically did everything you don't want to do in the oil economy. It spent all its money, it maintained an overvalued exchange rate. That meant it became ever more dependent on this one export called oil.
I'm Kai Rizdal. How having the world's cheapest oil became Venezuela's greatest liability. That story next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
I'm Al Letson, and I'm hosting a brand new show here on WJCT. And I'm bringing some friends with me.
Everything with Al Letson as the host and Willie Evans Jr. as the DJ. Well, he's not really a DJ, but he does something.
Every week, we'll be bringing you some stories, some laughs, and something to think about. Sundays at 2 and Wednesdays at 1. Everything. It's a new show, because we're going to do everything we want.
Everything. The opposite of nothing.
When teachers get training, it's not so hard to recognize gifted students.
They're quirky. They are a little bit argumentative, and they keep you on your toes, and they don't let you get away with anything.
But sometimes those things are harder to see in students still learning English. What some schools are doing to identify all gifted students, later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, some of this area's most outstanding humanitarians will receive some well-deserved honors this week, including someone right here at WJCT. We'll tell you about that in a minute. Right now, though, we welcome Nancy Bronner, president of OneJax, and honoree Kevin Gay of Operation New Hope. They're here with a preview of this week's 2016 Humanitarian Awards Dinner. Good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And this is happening Thursday night at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. You're going to be honoring some of this area's most outstanding citizens. This is something OneJax does every year.
Yes, this is actually our 46th year.
Wow.
And we're delighted to be able to honor this year's Silver Award winners, Michael Boylan, Susan Green.
Our own CEO.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Susan Green, our own board member.
Yes, mm-hmm. WJCT is well represented. The wonderful Kevin Gay, who's here with us today, and a legendary member of our community, Harry Frisch, who's being honored for his work and at the age of 92, so we're delighted.
Wow. And Kevin Gay, founder and CEO of Operation New Hope and Ready for Work Jacksonville. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's quite an honor. I'm really excited.
And the work of your nonprofit is certainly deserving of this recognition. Can you share with us the latest news from Operation New Hope?
Well, there's a lot of great things going on. I mean, you can look every day in the newspaper. Everywhere around the country, people are talking about this issue and how important it is to address, you know, folks coming out of incarceration and connecting. And our community is, I think, one of the best in America from companies willing to hire and folks in the community that are willing to engage and have conversation. And that's why I was so honored. I think this award means so much to me because of what OneJax is all about, you know, bringing conversation, bringing people together and coming up with solutions of bringing people together versus keeping them apart.
And that's really OneJax for decades now. That's really been its mission, to bring people of all backgrounds and faiths and belief systems to work together
Absolutely.
In this city.
It is our vision to create an inclusive community here in Jacksonville. And so we do design our programming to bring people together, to celebrate our differences, and create a core value in Jacksonville that our diversity is our greatest strength.
And the list this year is especially distinguished. The Lifetime Achievement Gold Medallion winner will be civil rights pioneer and aerospace leader Alton Yates, who is revered in this city for so many initiatives he's been involved in. As you mentioned, our own CEO, Michael Boylan, Hope McMath, director of the Kummer Museum, Kevin of Operation New Hope, Susan Green, and Harry Frisch, founder of Beaver Street Fisheries. Every year, it's always interesting to see who's on the list.
You know, I love celebrating the work of these great people, some of which is well known. Others who are out there doing amazing work, and they're the unsung heroes of our community. So what a great opportunity to celebrate these group.
Yeah, and Kevin, I would put you in that group. Not everyone might know that you've been invited to the White House several times over the last decade to talk about your work in prisoner reentry. That's just one example of how Operation New Hope is seen as a national model when it comes to helping people leaving incarceration find work and reintegrate into society.
Well, and I thank you for that. I'm so honored to be a part of that. And, you know, I think most of the recipients will probably say the same thing that I am, and that is, you know, we're up there standing and representing, you know, different groups and organizations, and I represent a phenomenal team, a staff that works so very hard. And nobody really knows a lot about these issues, and but it's an opportunity to stand up and say thank you to so many wonderful people and so many wonderful givers in our community, the same families that we all know so well, who are willing to step up and support issues. And I can tell you that that's not happening around other cities in America. And so this is a great opportunity to celebrate, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it.
Now, this is Thursday night, not at the Downtown Hyatt Hotel. You want to make sure people realize there's a change of venue this year. It's not too late to buy their tickets.
That's correct. We have over 800 people coming. It's a great event. And I think at a time in our society and in our country where we have a lot of rhetoric that is dividing us, we want to come together and celebrate what unites us.
So again, if you haven't bought your tickets yet for the One Jacks 2016 Humanitarian Awards Dinner, it is this Thursday night at That's the right. Prime Osborne Convention Center.
That's correct. And we welcome all of you to come and help us honor these great humanitarians.
It's onejacks.org to get your tickets now and learn about the 2016 One Jacks Humanitarians. Again, that awards dinner is this Thursday evening. It includes our own CEO, Michael Boylan, and our own board member, Susan Green, among the honorees. Kevin Gay, founder and CEO of Operation New Hope, with us, and Nancy Bronner, who heads up One Jacks. So good to see you both, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That's our program. Diane Reams up next. New research shows location is a key factor in determining life expectancy for poor Americans, and it confirms the disparity in health outcomes between the rich and the poor. How health and lifespan are linked to factors like income, geography, and gender. That's next. Right now, we want you to support WJCT. As we continue our spring pledge drive, we're getting so close to our goal, but we need you to call right now. Here's how.
353-9528 is the number to call. We so thank everyone who's called so far. Folks like MJ and Noel in Springfield, Carrie in St. Augustine. She accepted our social worker challenge and is challenging other Junior Service League of St. Augustine ladies to call us now at 353-9528. That was a challenge we had earlier this morning for social workers to challenge other social workers to do the right thing. John in Atlantic Beach, thank you so much. He loves fresh air. Jill in Julington Creek, she called us. We thank you. Eric in Arlington, he likes Marketplace. Of course, Marketplace is a great show. And we're up to $54,367.
Wow, that took a jump.
Michelle Corum, when did you come in? I didn't see you there.
Slid in right behind you.
Snuck in on me.
Yeah. So, we're doing okay.
We're doing okay. We need to reach 80,000 so we can wrap this thing up. Mm-hmm. We could do that today.
It's been done, they say.
Yes, it has. We've done $30,000 days. So if everyone would call every time we come on the air, we could wrap this at 6 o'clock tonight or maybe even earlier, maybe at 5, we could just close up shop and let NPR take over. 353-9528, over $500,000 to pay for the programming that we offer you every day. So it doesn't come cheap, but then most things in life don't if they're really good.
Yeah, we do enjoy talking to you during the pledge drives, a spring pledge drive right now. But like David says, it's good to get back to our other work. And we do appreciate hearing from you. It's always fun around here. We get to meet some new faces and voices that come in and also make the same pitch and talk to you as well. So that's fun. The food's good. We have some sweets and stuff, but
all
really,
the local businesses send us breakfast, so we love those.
Yeah,
folks.
Yeah. But we are just missing one thing, and that's your phone call. I know that you have been thinking about it this week, but for whatever reason, you've been busy, as we all are. We're giving you a few seconds and some nice music here to sashay over to the phone.
Exactly. Here's a little music to pledge by for a few seconds. Here, it's a Moon Glow from Quincy Jones.
Ooh, let's listen. Thank you.
What a nice version.
9528. All right.
It's an old Benny Goodman song from the 30s, and Quincy really makes it nice and fresh. That's music from Relax Radio, a new music service we offer you midnight to 5, 7 days a week, and 24 hours a day on HD3. One more reason to support this, your public radio station. We couldn't do it without your help. We have 3,000 songs plus in rotation on Relax Radio, so we call it Music for Dreams. Late at night, just turn it on and fall asleep, and you'll wake up feeling extra special, especially if you called us at 353-9528 and shared a little bit of your wealth with us to keep the great programming coming to this, your community. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Quincy Jones thanks you also.
Yeah. First Coast Connect, that's the program we've been listening to this hour. It's really a local treasure, and it's a program that breaks news. It keeps us informed. It keeps us entertained as well.
And keeps you interactive with us. You get to call us, and you
right,
get to talk to us.
It is one of our guests. Few shows that live you can call in and ask your question. I'm amazed at the great questions we get, too, from the listeners out there that think of something that maybe hasn't been brought up in the conversation.
Absolutely.
So, and if you don't know what you do without that Friday weekly roundtable, I really enjoy that one because it sort of keeps us up with what's been going on locally during the week. And if you can't plan your weekend, of course, until you've heard from Carrie Speckman, well, then be here on Thursdays because that's when Carrie is on First Coast Connect, talking about what's going on in the community, and we appreciate
it. And on Mondays, our friend Cole Pepper comes in and gives us sports.
Sports on Mondays.
You do the weather, he does the sports, all the reporters, and you are doing the news. I think we're a full-service radio station.
Sounds very full-service.
It sure does. 353-9528 for your support. That's the number to call. Grab your credit card, whether it's $5 or $500. It all goes into the programming fund and keeps great programming coming your way. Mm. And we just can't do it without you. It's just the way it works. Is we ask you for help twice a year, and you always come through for us. Here's a little Henry Mancini. Oh, that is definitely music for dreams.
Yeah,
I'm ready just to call
it
a day.
It feels like a swoon, doesn't
it? That's called Lujan.
Lujan.
And I've always known the music, and I never knew the title.
That's French for...
I have no idea. Lujan. Thanks for stumping me.
Okay, we'll work on that. We do, s'il vous plaît, hope for your call anytime now here at WJCT during the Spring Pledge Drive. That's 353-9528. Again, 904-353-9528. We've got some more great programming just ahead, but we're just taking a few minutes to appeal to you in whatever way we can to get you to go to the phone right now before Diane Rehm starts, and the afternoon programming as well as we go into the day.
So we will give you the phone number one more time and let the music play us out, 353-9528. We thank everyone who called during First Coast Connect. If you're a big fan of Diane Rehm, call now so you won't miss any of that program. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, 353-9528.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.